Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. I'm so happy to have you join us again. Today, my guest is Patricia Colessa. February is American Heart Month, so Patricia and I dish about ways to support your heart health. We also discuss the pros and cons of delivering nutrition education on social media and the value of a registered dietitian within an interdisciplinary team. Patricia is a New Jersey-based registered dietitian who uses an anti-diet individualized approach in nutrition and fitness and enjoys working with women who are looking to improve their overall health. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Patricia Colessa, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for agreeing to be my guest today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Dina, and thank you so much for having me.
We share being dietitians together, and I don't know you from before this. Sometimes I'll start off with a little bit of like an origin story of how I know my guests, but you were kind enough to, I think, answer one of my requests on a Facebook group, if I'm not mistaken. And so I love when that happens because then we get to connect with people within our field, within growing a network, becoming colleagues. And for people who listen to this, this is just another reason. Don't be shy. Reach out. Make friends online. That's what the virtual space is there for sometimes. So let's talk about your origin story. Can you share with us a little bit about what even got you into this field?
It's kind of a little bit of a long story. So I actually didn't want to be a nutritionist when I was in high school. I knew I wanted to work in healthcare. I had applied to the nursing schools over in here in New Jersey, as well as the science school. And I ended up being accepted by the science school first. And then from there, I decided I wanted to be in nutrition. Went through the program. I actually didn't know that being a dietitian was a thing until my sophomore year. So I became more involved in different nutrition related careers. I actually started out in sports nutrition. So I was working with the United States rowing team for a while as an intern until about 2019 when I started my dietetic internship. From there, I was focusing in sports nutrition and entrepreneurship. So the sports nutrition was still there. But then I just found myself wanting to do something a little bit different. Became a dietitian in 2020, started out in an outpatient facility, generally working with weight loss surgery, but I also saw weight management as well as diabetes, pediatrics. So you could say all across the board. And then I left there in about 2021 to work in an acute care facility. So you can see like a lot going on. And then in about 2021, we were talking a little bit about social media before the show. I started that, became really interested in getting to wider audiences, which led me to finally launch my business, Dietitian Dish LLC, in November of last year. So that's where I'm at now.
This just goes to show, especially in this profession, that there's so much variety in the scope of what we can do. And this is what I love about it too. And the fact that you got a taste of pretty much everything, I don't think there was a single like practice item that you did not mention that I was thinking of, because you really ran the gamut. And I know in your dietetic internship, I was still kind of am a preceptor. If you don't mind, I can share, it's Wellness Workdays is where you went through your dietetic internship. I love working with them because they do take a little bit more of a non-traditional approach to how they focus on some of their experiences. And so I like that you got the sports nutrition concentration and the entrepreneurship concentration. That's not something sometimes people see in their curriculum through their major. There's not a lot of, you know, finessing of those kinds of communities or populations. So I love that. And then working also in a more clinical setting too, which is sometimes people think that's all you have to do when you become a dietitian or you go into it. And that's not necessarily true. If you don't like working in a hospital, you don't have to work in a hospital. If it's not your gig, you don't, you know, don't love the vibe. But I also like that you got the experience in it. With all due respect to my internship assignments and rotations, we kind of land, because the internship rotations, for anyone who doesn't know this out there that's listening, for us it was 4 months, 16 weeks. I think that's kind of about the same, where you're in a hospital setting or something more clinical. I think we were in long-term care. One of my other intern friends was in dialysis center. So there wasn't a lot of variety, but you got to see like the senior population. You got to do weight management. There was renal things. I think you had some experience with too. We were a little bit confined just because of the facility we had didn't concentrate in certain things. What was one of the most fascinating things that you found out of that, that either made you interested in the clinical stuff while you were in it or made you want to get the heck out as fast as possible?
So I actually had a very interesting situation, Dina. I had started my clinical rotation only a few months before COVID. So I did about 6 weeks in the acute care site that I had, and then everything shut down. I was kicked out. And then I was fortunate enough that my job had, hired me and had said, we're okay with the fact you don't have a lot of clinical experience. We understand. So I told them, hey, look, I don't have personal experience as far as TPN, enteral feedings. So I like to say that this is almost like a review or like a repeat of my clinical rotation in a sense, but I've gotten to learn a lot more. So not only was I able to pick up on the things I didn't really get to do so much as an intern, but I've also had other opportunities like helping with outpatient presentations, being able to do tabling for National Nutrition Month, and then just having more privileges as far as, writing the orders and being able to work with the doctors and nurses more closely. Especially now that I have my RD credential.
Yeah, that was a tough time. I am really sorry that a lot of you went through that. Some people I think were in like simulation labs or had to watch a lot of virtual things just to kind of get experience in that way, but not true in-person on-site experience. So that was unfortunate, but at least you got through it. They weren't like holding you back for 2 years until things settled down. That's sometimes the challenge that happens with things like this. I know that you and I had talked about too, kind of focusing a little bit on a heart health discussion, because at the time of our recording and the time that we want to publish this, we're going to be entering into February, which is Heart Health Awareness Month. But when we talk about heart health, there are so many different things that are related to heart, both in lifestyle factors, but also things that can affect our heart condition, like high cholesterol, high blood pressure, or complications of other things or medicines. So let's talk a little bit about that. When you think of heart health, when you're working with people with heart-related conditions, what are some things that come to mind for you? What do you feel like you have expertise in guiding discussions in? And this is multi-part questions, I apologize. And is there anything in particular that you like to focus in on when it comes to talking about heart health?
Yeah, absolutely. So when actually here at our hospital, we're doing a heart failure initiative. So we're giving more education and trying to track down those people who come in with congestive heart failure to really, hone in on them, give them the education that they might need. So this way they can consider getting nutrition counseling outpatient and making those nutrition changes that we're looking for. So overall, I do feel like a lot of the conversation is centered around sodium intake and how much of that is, allotted. But I think a lot of people are very much aware that they do need to limit their sodium, but sometimes they're surprised by the types of food that contain sodium. So, most times they're like, okay, I don't add salt to my food. That's absolutely fine. But have you thought about the salt that you're eating through maybe extra sauces and dressings at your meals, or maybe you're buying convenience foods that are a little higher in sodium? So just trying to show them that there are other food products that they might not realize are a little higher in salt. Now, the other thing I do like to talk about is what can be added to the diet. So I try to focus that more of that conversation there when I'm working with my patients, because oftentimes they feel discouraged by what they're limiting in their diet. So the two big nutrients I like to emphasize are potassium. So through your bananas, avocados, and beans, or your monounsaturated fats, that of course we got to bring up olive oil because that's the powerhouse, but also foods like your walnuts, almonds, and your salmon.
I agree with you in taking that mindset because a few reasons, and Patricia, you might agree with me or not, depending on the relationships that you've had with other healthcare providers. When I get people sent to me or when people find me to work with me, they sometimes come in with a very frightened attitude. A lot of fear has been put in them, either because of a new diagnosis or because they've been told, you can't eat this anymore, stop eating that. And they're like, that's not helpful because I'm focusing now on the restrictive end of my diet. And like you said, not the things that could be helpful. And in saying so, I've said plenty of times on these episodes, whether I'm working and talking with other healthcare providers or not, with all due respect to people in the healthcare professions, if you don't know about food and nutrition, don't talk about it. Just refer to us. We are dietitians. We'll take it from there because you could do more harm than good. You could put people at risk for undereating or just like fear mongering and having restricted diet patterns or disordered eating patterns. What are your thoughts on that too? When it comes to not necessarily the fear mongering of things, but have you seen or have you had any issues with people coming with a diagnosis that they have no idea how to manage or what that even entails, complications that are related to it, or food and nutrition guidance that they've been given that is completely not correct?
Yeah, it happens quite often, unfortunately. Not specific to heart health, but I have had conversations with people with GI conditions where there's a one sentence paper saying, okay, don't have nuts and seeds. But what else? What if those people aren't really eating nuts and seeds? What if there's other foods in the diet that they maybe should be limiting and they can't tolerate? And one thing to kind of piggyback and circle back to the heart health situation is oftentimes these people are coming in with other nutrition related conditions. So it might be like diabetes or a kidney related disease, and then the heart failure comes after that. So then you're telling people, okay, I have to remove this, and this for diabetes, and now I have to remove this, and this for heart failure. Then it's kind of like, okay, what's there left to eat, right? So I do try to not, again, going back to the sodium because it's the most common one in heart health, trying to, yes, mention it, but also kind of circle back to the previous medical conditions that they had, like the diabetes or the kidney related diseases that might have facilitated or possibly contributed to the heart failure.
Yeah, that's a really tricky situation. I've often shared on here, and my mom is totally fine with me disclosing her medical history, that she started off with hypertension, high blood pressure. She's been on medicine kind of almost lifelong in a way, and that ended up contributing to chronic kidney disease. So now she's been trying to manage the different stages of that. But as I've said before in some of these episodes, the things that are helping her manage her high blood pressure and her heart health are the things that are potentially going to exacerbate or not be useful for her kidney health. So this is why it's also important that you, as the patient, come with a little bit of knowledge, education, or advocacy of understanding or questions to ask. What's going on? It's not just a, right, Patricia, it's not a one size fits all approach to things. There's a lot of nuance to it. And so you're absolutely right. So in my mom's case, she's like, so I can't eat this, and this because of my kidneys. And I have to eat this, and this because of my health, my heart, but they don't match up. So what am I supposed to do? And we really have, through some trial and error, found some things on rotation that kind of like interact in that Venn diagram. They overlap of like, these are the things that you can go through. So, maybe she has like 20 different foods or ingredients that she can put on rotation so that it doesn't become super boring. It seems realistic for her to be able to create meal plans to support all kinds of her health issues. And she feels satisfied and doesn't feel like she's in that restrictive zone. So I love what you said about that. Will you share too a little bit your thoughts on other lifestyle factors that have to do specifically with heart health, but I'm assuming also with just overall well-being, the role that things like stress and sleep and physical activity play? What are some of the things that you provide guidance to with your patients, and where do you see some challenges that might come up that you have to help them overcome?
I want to start with stress because that definitely plays a big role in heart health. And I do feel like that circles back to eating as well, because if you're feeling stressed about the way that you're eating or removing certain foods from your diet, that could have a huge effect on your heart and bring up your stress levels. So, I mean, overall stress management is super important. I think it's really great if you find things that are helpful for you to manage your stress. So if there's activities that you love, like reading a book or maybe like putting on a face mask at night. And I'm not saying that these will be, you know, the cure all, but they can help sort of treat and maybe prevent these heart-related conditions. Now, another one that I'd love to bring up is exercise. And while it's not entirely in our scope of practice, I do feel like exercise has multiple benefits. I mean, we always hear about health benefits in our profession, but it also, it's a part of mental health too. So if you're exercising, you might experience less stress, and then you might be able to manage your blood pressure. Funny story, I was told my blood pressure is really low. And when I told them that I exercise pretty consistently every week, they said that's perfectly normal, which I was very surprised to hear about. But nothing serious or crazy as far as that. It's just that, you know, sometimes exercise can have an effect that way. One thing I also want to add, and it's not necessarily similar to the exercise and the stress, but also hydration is another lifestyle factor. I did want to bring that up because often with heart health, a lot of people have different fluid needs. So they come in surprised, like, oh, why can't I drink water? And sometimes your fluid is a little bit limited if you do have a heart-related condition, because you tend to retain more fluid in different areas of your body. So it is important, going back to speaking with a registered dietitian and a doctor, to kind of determine what and how much fluid is best for you.
I think the same situation comes up with kidney health as well, depending on what is excreted, the output, and managing that. So your doctor might have you on a restricted fluid intake, and even restricted, they might say, you know, like, whatever, 24 ounces a day versus 60 ounces a day, or whatever that might be, that you can, you know, discuss, as Patricia said, with your healthcare providers. I love what you said about physical activity. Yes, you're correct. In a dietitian's world, you know, we can't necessarily be putting together maybe like a personal training plan for people if we don't have that background. Similar to, like I just said before, if other healthcare providers or wellness professionals don't have the background in nutrition and dietetics, they have to be careful that they're not doing more harm than good. But there is a general US guideline, if you have medical clearance, that you can follow. And I think, Patricia, you might agree with me, hopefully, with this too, that I've started living by the rule for me of just move whatever I can whenever I can. The real rule is more about like, just don't be super sedentary if I can get up throughout my day. And especially when you're in, maybe like us, when you're seeing patients back to back, or you're starting working as an entrepreneur, or you're just a busy person who happens to be more computer based, you could be sitting there at a computer without realizing I haven't gotten up in hours. So if people come up with, I'm going to say reasons, not excuses, but you know who you are. If they have reasons about I can't, or I don't have the time, or I don't like to work out, what are some suggestions, recommendations that you can give as guidance for people who just maybe don't know how to get started?
I love to talk about this, and I've brought it up so many times in past podcasts I've done. So one thing I do want to mention is not to overwhelm yourself with a lot of time, exercise time at once. So if it helps you, maybe try doing small increments of exercise throughout the day. So of course, we know the guidelines are 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, right? But if it helps you to keep it consistent, maybe try starting with 10 minutes, and then you add another 5 minutes, and then you add another five, and you work your way towards that goal. There is nothing stopping you from, you know, starting with a small amount and working your way up, because the goal is ultimately to feel comfortable with what you're doing and confident while doing it. Now, another thing I do want to discuss too is finding movement that you love, because I'll give running as an example, because I know a lot of people really hate running. So sometimes there's like a misconception that you have to do a certain exercise in order to be healthy or to look a certain way. So if you're doing an exercise, like, let's say you like to meditate at the end of the day, or you like to do golf or biking, something that's like not as common as far as exercise. If that's something that you really love to do and stick with, then absolutely by all means do it, because that's how you're going to get that amount of time in that you're looking for. And finally, just like frequency. So going back to the length of time that you're doing, also building up the amount of days per week. So if like when, so I'll give an example of myself. When I was in school, I was not very good at exercising or sticking with it, given that we were so busy with our classes. But if once I started working, I had a like steady schedule. So I would work 8:30 to 5. So I was like, okay, I can get to the gym at least 3 days a week after work and go for an hour, right? Because I like to personally do half cardio, half weights. That's my thing. Doesn't have to be yours, but find that cushion that you're comfortable with, where you have the rest days, you have the days that you go exercise, and stick with that. And once you're feeling like very confident in it and you're like, hey, I could do another day, you go ahead and do that.
Yeah, that's a great guidance, because you really do. You have to do what you love. I like running. My knees, my ankles, my back recently have not loved running, but I would rather run outdoors, not so much in this current weather. Well, today's a bit of an anomaly because it's like 50 degrees in the end of January. But when it's, you know, in the single digits or low double digits, I'm not in love with that. So then I might go to the gym and work on the treadmill. But like you just said, you know, I have a smartwatch. I'd like to keep track of my heart rate. I also, on the opposite end, I've had high blood pressure issues. So I do try to make sure that I'm moving throughout the day. And I also have some cholesterol issues to manage. And I share that only because I've done low impact movements for maybe like 12 or 18 minutes, little tiny segmented things first thing in the morning. And I'm watching my heart rate get into like the 130s. And I just think to myself, how is this possible? I have like 2 feet on the ground the whole entire time. But it really does speak to what you said: intensity, duration, frequency. Are you moving? How often? You know, are you on an incline, but you're moving slowly? It might be just as much intensity for you that if you're on a flat level and you're really hauling Heine over there. So I think these are all great pieces of advice to give. Okay, so earlier too, we were talking a little bit about social media. Can't escape it. It is what it is. A lot of us are using it as a way to broaden our reach and target some people who might be interested in what we have to share and know. Whether or not it's with social media, or maybe it's just, you know, through conversations you've had with people you've come across in IRL, in real life, Patricia, is there anything currently in the hot topic world, or things that kind of, you feel like there's a little bit of mis or disinformation that you've had to debunk recently, anything that kind of gets your blood pressure going? I'm putting that in quotations, your blood pressure going. Whether it's good or not, like maybe it's like, oh, I love talking about this topic, or I hate talking about this topic.
Oh my God. Yeah, Dina, all the time. I think that's the plus side of social media, is being able to, you know, have the expertise that we have and educate others as far as the myth busting. But then you're almost constantly all of the time being exposed to these things that you don't agree with, the fear mongering, the additional raise in blood pressure. I think especially on TikTok, I will say, because that is, you know, a newer app and it's upcoming, there is a lot of social media trends there of promises for weight loss, promises of better health. And unfortunately, it's being done by people who don't have those credentials. And oftentimes it you have to be the one to kind of take a neutral stance, because some people really do support it and it works really well for them. But then other times you're like, the science is not there. So I think it's definitely a battle trying to find that middle ground where you can, you know, give the information and also understand that it's not fully there yet.
And I think this also speaks sometimes to human curiosity, lack of understanding certain things. So looking to people who sound like they know what they're talking about, but not really understanding for sure, like you said, if they're qualified credentialed professionals. And even some qualified credentialed professionals have their own agenda with things. So they might also be part of the group that's kind of trying to steer you in a certain direction or sell something that they're creating. And that could also be a little bit confusing, because it's like, who do I believe? So on our end of things, just putting it out there that, you know, we are dietitians. We don't, we're all basically trained in the same kind of curriculum, but we are also allowed to, you know, go about our business and do other things. But ultimately, we do have to bring it back to what does the research show? And I think the research issue that for me that comes up is sometimes things aren't well researched or has been a really long time since somebody has updated the research, or the research is confined to, you know, lab animals that are not necessarily exactly how a human or a human female is made up. So some of these conditions that we see out there that feel a little bit more challenging, I totally get that people want to just like find an answer, like help me fix this problem. But I really think it helps to, just like you would maybe if you're at a doctor's office, you know, get a couple of second opinions, like see who else is talking about these things, do a little bit deeper diving, and just be careful of what you follow. If it sounds like it's very extreme, if it sounds like it's very restrictive, or if somebody has somewhat of an agenda that they're trying to get you to, you know, buy their $2,000 meal plan supplements or whatever, yeah, they might have not your best interests in mind. So that's a little bit difficult to navigate that internet world sometimes out there. Thank you
Yeah,
for that,
I
Patricia.
absolutely agree. Yeah, no problem. I do want to say another thing that's been really helpful for me is reading books written by dietitians. There's a lot of different talking about, especially the wellness and diet industry, and they cover a lot of those areas where, you know, maybe there isn't a lot of science in it. Maybe there's things that are working well, and they talk about people who do really have and want that help. And they might already have a chronic disease that they want an immediate cure for, and it's not always easy. So they go through the nuances of that, which I find is really cool.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, you know, there is something to say about practice-based evidence and anecdotal-based evidence and research-based evidence, because they all play a role in some way, but not everything that works for someone is going to work for someone else. And we don't necessarily want to implement a practice or a treatment or some sort of intervention without really making sure we're not doing any harm. So again, that's great, making sure that, you know, we're looking for qualified people. All right, so Patricia, now I have to ask, because do we lead and live by example? What is a current week in the life of you as far as whether it's work? Do you have a traditional standard 9-to-5 job? And how do you implement your own health and wellness goals within what you're doing right now?
Oh, I really love that question, Dina. I do have a very busy schedule. I work a 9-to-5, and then a lot of the end of my day is spent making dinner, and then it follows with trying to grow and build my business. So I do see clients on the side. I do try to network and connect with people on social media through my posts. So a couple of little things that I do, we had talked about going to the gym a couple days a week. So I try to implement that often. I keep it consistent by sometimes going with a friend and mixing it up with different workouts by working different muscle groups, which has been very helpful for me. Now, as far as food, I do try to, you know, implement a lot of heart healthy changes. I'm happy that you mentioned that you have high blood pressure and high cholesterol, because I found out too, I have high cholesterol, but I do understand that runs in my family. So I'm not too worried about it, but I do want to keep an eye on it. Now, a couple of things that I've been doing to focus on that and deal with that is trying to focus on those dinners that I can control. So I will say that I typically eat my meals here in our cafeteria at work because it's easier for me, and I don't want the added stress of preparing a meal the night before at this point in time. Sometimes I'll do it, sometimes I don't. So I try to get a great breakfast in the morning. I always add a protein, a healthy fat, and a fiber. And breakfast is my favorite meal, so it's always very easy to do that. Around dinner time, I feel a little more tired. It's the end of the day. I've done all this work, but I try to have those options available, especially plant-based proteins. One of the goals I do really have is trying to have a meatless meal throughout the day if I can. So I keep foods like edamame, tofu, chickpea pasta. This way it's quick, it's easy. I have my plant-based protein there. I'm getting some extra fiber. When it's not easy for me to like go all in on a meal and spend hours in the kitchen really doing that, especially because it's already late and I just want to have it done, relax and go to bed and start my day again the next day.
Managing self-care? Physical activity, like you said, could play a role in managing stress, but do you do anything else that, socializing or anything else that you commit to somewhat regularly?
So for me, I love to read. So I'll read for leisure often. I mean, sometimes, like I mentioned before, I've read books that are written by dietitians and I'll try to teach myself and educate myself. But I like to read because it kind of brings you into another world and you get away from the craziness of your day. So that's been really helpful for me. Also, just like sometimes I'll throw on a face mask or maybe I'll listen to some calming music to kind of help me unwind. Because sleep is another thing we didn't get to cover as much, but that plays just as much of a role in heart health and healthy living too.
That's fantastic. Where do you see your future going? Because you're working on setting up your business. What would be like, your ideal life in 5 years or less or more?
Yeah, so my ideal life would be probably setting my own hours, especially since, as you have heard in the audience, as well as you, Dina, is I do spend a lot of time working between my full-time job and the business. So the hope would be I get to kind of do a more part-time so I am able to keep and maintain even more health-related behaviors than I do now. And, something for your audience to know is your schedule is going to change. It might not always be the same, and that's totally normal. You can always make small behavior changes in order to have healthy living. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. The hope would be that I'm running my business full time, as sole form of income. I have recently started taking clients and have been accepting insurance. So I've been working with a few people on the side. I'd like that to play a part of my business, but I also would really love to be a media dietitian, especially to get to a wider audience and network with new people. I saw that a lot of dietitians were in Scotland recently for an influencer sponsored event, which I thought was so cool. And I would love to do that. So I think just overall, like being able to reach more people and have a bigger impact, especially since I do work in a small hospital now. So I don't get to see the people that I would love to see long term.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask that too, which you mentioned a little bit, I think, before we started recording, of a typical ideal client of yours. Who does tend to gravitate to you, or who do you tend to gravitate towards that you want to make sure that you reach out to and can help them on their wellness journey?
Yeah, definitely. I would love to work with women ages 20 to 60. So just to give you a reference, I'm in my late 20s. So I went through college. I got my master's degree. I'm working a full-time job. I know it can be hard to make lifestyle and health-related changes. And especially for us women, there's so much information out there about how we should eat, what we should look like, how much we should be exercising. So I just want to help you find what food and exercise and health related behaviors work best for you. And I want to support you women to women, So I would love to see people who just are really excited about food and nutrition, want to make changes and want the support of a nutrition expert like us. And if you're able to work virtual, that's even better because I see clients that way at the moment as that's worked really well for me.
But that's really great. So you're coming in at people who are just fresh out of college and starting off being their own independent person, the whole life cycle in between of becoming a family unit and having to navigate the role of being a mom or a parent or a care provider, and then going into the decade of wrapping up their work and maybe looking towards retirement and maybe being empty nesters. So that's quite a range of people that you can help in certain aspects or parts of their life as they're aging. That's wonderful. I wish you the best in that. Patricia, as we are coming up on the end of our discussion, I want to ask, first of all, is there anything else that we didn't necessarily touch upon that you would like to share or words of wisdom before we officially wrap up?
I just want to emphasize that if you're making small behavioral changes, that's probably the best and most impactful for your long-term health. I think we're told a lot that we have to do so many different things in order to achieve health. But I always say, take it one step at a time, take it day by day, and don't be afraid to seek help and support from a registered dietitian or nutrition professional, because you want to have that additional support and they can guide you through that process.
Yeah, having us as part of your team, there's no shame in the game. Yes, you could probably Google things and whatever, but we'd rather you not, because there's a lot of nuance in that. And then we become your support system too. We help you. That's the hard part of what we do too with medical nutrition therapy. The education component and the counseling component is helping you navigate some things that you might need to go over as far as trial and error is concerned, or you have questions about, you thought you were making the right decision. So I really love that, Patricia, and I'm happy that we are colleagues in this field. So my last two questions of my interviews are always a food pun intended question, which is, what's on your plate today? That means figuratively, what's the next thing that you are working on once we disconnect from each other? And what is your next meal going to be?
I'll start with the next meal. I'm hoping it'll be burrata ravioli from Trader Joe's because I really do love that flavor of ravioli from there. And I like to add mushrooms and spinach just to get a little extra fiber in there, a little bit of tomato sauce. So it's just a very easy meal, takes 10 minutes, but I get my protein, my veggies, and some fats there. Now, as far as my next projects go, I will say that I just finished up my website, which has been really great. I did a whole different makeover, and it's not fun when you do it, for some people at least, but I'm feeling in a more comfortable place with it. And then I actually have two podcasts lined up. So I will be doing a series on diet myths and diet trends with a program called Soul Sanity that is based out of the UK and the US. And I'll be doing half hour segments on different diet trends, starting with detox diets and cleanses. So I'm looking forward to that. And then I have another one next week.
Those are hot topics indeed. Well, I will be linking all of your things to our episode notes so people can find you and connect with you and watch you as you go towards your own journey of building your practice and maybe becoming a media spokesperson or whatever you see yourself doing down the line. It's been a real pleasure getting to know you, and I'm so grateful for the time that you spent and all of the insight that you shared. Patricia, thank you.
Of course, Dina. Thanks again for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.